I'm going to read now myself from, before we sing again, from 2 Samuel chapter 2 and verse 12. 2 Samuel 2 and verse 12. Now Abner, the son of Ner, and the servants of Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul, went out from Manahem to Gibeon. And Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and the servants of David went out and met them by the pool of Gibeon. So they sat down, one on one side of the pool, and the other on the other side of the pool. Then Abner said to Joab, "Let the young men now arise and compete before us." And Joab said, "Let them arise." So they arose and went over by number 12 from Benjamin, followers of Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul, and 12 from the servants of David. And each one grasped his opponent by the head and thrust his sword in his opponent's side so that they fell down together. Therefore, that place was called the Field of Sharp Swords, which is in Gibeon. So there was a very fierce battle that day, and Abner and the men of Israel were beaten before the servants of David. Now the three sons of Zeruiah were there, Joab and Abishai and Asahel. And Asahel was as fleet of foot as a wild gazelle. So Asahel pursued Abner, and in going he did not turn to the right hand or to the left from following Abner. Then Abner looked behind him and said, "Are you Asahel?" He answered, "I am." And Abner said to him, "Turn aside to your right hand or to your left, and lay hold on one of the young men and take his armor for yourself." But Asahel would not turn aside from following him. So Abner again said to Asahel, "Turn aside from following me. Why should I strike you to the ground? How then could I face your brother Joab?" However, he refused to turn aside. Therefore Abner struck him in the stomach with the blunt end of the spear, so that the spear came out of his back, and he fell down there and died on the spot. So it was that as many as came to the place where Asahel fell down and died stood still. Joab and Abishai also pursued Abner. And the sun was going down when they came to the hill of Ammah, which is before Gia, by the road to the wilderness of Gibeon. Now the children of Benjamin gathered together behind Abner and became a unit and took their stand on top of a hill. Then Abner called to Joab and said, "Shall the sword devour forever? Do you not know that it will be bitter in the latter end? How long will it be until you tell the people to return from pursuing their brethren?" And Joab said, "As God lives, unless you had spoken, surely then by morning all the people would have given up pursuing their brethren." So Joab blew a trumpet, and all the people stood still, and did not pursue Israel any more, nor did they fight any more. Then Abner and his men went on all that night before the plain, crossed over the Jordan, and went through all Bithron, and they came to Mahanaim. Amen. Mm-hmm. So we ought to consider this evening's passage in the context of earlier on in the chapter. And something has happened in Israel. There are two rival kingdoms. There are two rival kings. One is Ish-bosheth, appointed and anointed by Abner. One is David, appointed and anointed by the Lord of Heaven. These kingdoms are currently coexisting. But the time is coming and has now come when those kingdoms must face each other and warfare will break out between them. And in our universe, both the physical universe and the supernatural realm, which we cannot see and yet we are part of, there are two kingdoms, the kingdom of darkness and the kingdom of light. And there is a battle, a war waging between the two, and it will one day climax. Christ himself will return, and Satan and his minions will be dealt with once and for all. And we have, in a sense, a picture of that here in ancient Israel with David and Ish-bosheth, a man of shame. And so we come to verse 12. Verse 12 says, "Now Abner, the son of Ner, and the servants of Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul, went out from Mahanaim to Gibeon." The leaders of the false kingdom are active. The leaders of this false kingdom are expanding. They're wanting more territory. They're wanting to consolidate what they already have. They're not sitting pretty in their capital. They're wanting to encroach upon the kingdom of David. I'm not sure when in time, if I can use that expression, that Satan and his angels fell. How it happens in relation to the book of Genesis. But what I do know is that Satan went to the Garden of Eden that he might expand his rebellion against the one true God. He was on the move. And that's what we have in verse 12. The servants of Ish-bosheth went out. And in verse 13, the kingdom of David is also going out. Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and the servants of David went out. And not only do they go out, they meet the enemy by the pool of Gibeon. Was it a chance encounter or had they intelligence? I know not. Sometimes I look at the Church of God in this country and I wish we went out and were on the move. However, it's happening here. And maybe David too is wanting to expand his own kingdom and bring more people into it. Zeruiah is in fact a sibling of David, a sister, and therefore Joab is his nephew. And Gibeon is an interesting place at which they meet. It was a key place in Joshua's conquest of Canaan. There was an element of deceit in that story. Joshua made a treaty which he might not otherwise have made. But it was also a place where the Lord showed his power with having the sun stand still. And so they meet at a place of quite a mixed spiritual heritage. And then we have this rather bizarre scenario in which these two armies kind of sit down facing each other. And there is a pool in the middle, David's army on one side, though he is not present, and Ish-bosheth's army on the other side, though he is not present either. Then Abner, who's really behind the throne, comes up with an idea. Young men now arise and compete before us. Can't help but think that Abner is ever looking to his own interest. Now, this proposal might be something similar to that which was proposed by Goliath. You bring out your champion and meet me because I'm the Philistine champion and that will save us the trouble of having a battle. Is that what Abner is proposing? Or is it some kind of entertainment for him? The reason isn't given. But Joab, David's captain, agrees to it. And so 12 from each side come to meet. They're equally matched and they're equally armed. Neither king is present, just his representatives and soldiers. And then in verse 16, we have a description of something which is almost comical in its failure. These 12 young men meet each other in battle and succeed in wiping each other out. So here are 24 corpses or dying people. If Abner thought, well, they can fight as a kind of proxy, well, it didn't end very well. It did not settle the dispute. Something tells me, though I can't prove it, that had David been present, he would not have agreed to it. When David was a young lad, he took on Goliath. He wouldn't have sent the young men to fight on his behalf. If he wanted to go to the trouble of avoiding a battle, he'd have said, "Abner, you and me, let's face each other now." I don't think he would have approved of young men going to their deaths while the old men watched. And then in verse 17, we get the battle proper. So there was a very fierce battle that day. And Abner and the men of Israel were beaten before the servants of David. So there's clearly more than 24 warriors there. I imagine there are several hundred on either side. We get the figures of those who died later on. So there is a fierce battle. These two kingdoms occupying the same land, each claiming to be the true kingdom of evil, finally clash. And David wins. Why did David win? Well, David was not there to lead the battle himself. He wasn't directing from the sidelines. He may not even have been aware of it. But David is part of God's greater plan. God has determined that a new Davidic monarchy will be established in Israel. And it's from that line that Messiah will come. He won't come from Ish-bosheth and the house of Saul. And therefore, it's natural that God gave victory to the king he wanted to actually reign. And Abner and his men are beaten. And then in verse 18, the writer tells us that Joab, Abishai, and Asahel are there, three nephews of David. Now, Abishai was the man who was with David when David entered Saul's camp and had the opportunity of killing him quietly and stealthily at night, but David did not. So we've come across him before. And then we get a description of Asahel. So Abishai is obviously trusted by David. If you're going to go into the heart of Saul's camp, he's the one you'll take with you. Asahel has another characteristic, though. We're told he was as fleet of foot as a wild gazelle. He's a good runner. He perseveres. He's nimble. He's unlikely to trip up and fall over. And the reason we get that description is because it explains why in verse 19 Asahel does what he does. He goes for the enemy general and pursues him. So the battle has been lost and the enemy is running away. Now Asahel has a degree of insight here. If you let Abner get away, he'll only come back. So he pursues him. We're told he did not turn to the right hand or to the left hand from following Abner. Asahel realizes that Abner is the one they should go for, not the ordinary men, the men of Benjamin. Abner is the problem, the power behind the throne. He is David's real opponent, and Asahel spots that. And evidently, there is something of a chase in which these two characters are kind of talking to each other as one is chased and the other pursues. Abner looks behind him and asks him, "Are you Asahel?" He clearly has a reputation. "I am." Remember, this conversation is going on while they're running. Abner said to him, "Turn aside to your right hand or to your left, and lay hold on one of the young men and take his armor for yourself." Abner clearly holds these young men in very low regard. He's quite happy to watch 24 of them die. He's trying to persuade his pursuer to pick off an easier victim. And of course, if you kill an enemy soldier, you get to keep his armor. Armor is expensive. It also is something of a trophy. Think of Goliath's armor, which David kept. And Abner is trying to persuade him to give up the chase. "Turn aside. Go that way. Go this way. choose another victim. We're told, though, that Asahel would not turn aside from following him. So Abner said again to Asahel, "Turn aside from following me." He really demonstrates dogged determination. Abner is running away, but he does not like to be pursued. And there's an interesting question that must be asked here. Should Asahel have turned aside? Or should he have kept going? Well, Abner presents another argument. He's probably panting and tired, but he's still able to think. "Why should I strike you to the ground? How then could I face your brother Joab?" So Abner doesn't really care for Asahel himself. What he's thinking of is his own future. "Listen, if I kill you now, young man, it's going to create a whole load of paperwork for me in the future. Go away, find someone else." However, he refused to turn aside. I have a great deal of respect for Asahel. He knew that Abner was the real problem. It wasn't the other men. And he cannot be bribed with other people's armor. There are easier pickings, but he doesn't go for it. He's then threatened with having to fight Abner, and he continues to chase him. And yet, he comes to a sticky end. And how I imagine verse 23 is that Abner kind of stops running and holds out the spear. And Asahel kind of runs straight onto it. And it's quite gruesome. And it was the blunt end of the spear as well, so perhaps rather painful. And the spear goes right through him, and he fell down there and died on the spot. Asahel might have been fleet of foot, but Abner was more cunning. Abner might have been an older man, but he was a wily warrior. And I wonder if Asahel underestimated the enemy. And there is a lesson here. We have a spiritual enemy. And because of the cross of Calvary, he is defeated. But don't underestimate him. There is power in those jewels. There is a cunning in that fallen angelic spirit. And sometimes I hear of believers taking on the devil. In our own Bible studies on a Thursday, some of the false teachers, admittedly, about whom Peter writes, he says, "They are presumptuous, self-willed. They are not afraid to speak evil of dignitaries, whereas angels who are greater in power and might do not bring a reviling accusation against them before the Lord." And that verse is open to interpretation, I know. I think I'm going to leave Satan to God. I have troubles enough in my own fallen heart. And the writer very sadly kind of points out that the spot where this young man fell is kind of like held in memory of him, so that when people go to that spot, they stand still. Which is ironic, of course, for one who is fleet of foot. So it was that as many as came to the place where Asahel fell down and died, stood still. This brave warrior of David, though slain, continues to be remembered. In verse 24, we're told, Joab and Abishai also pursued Abner. Now, where are they in this chase? Presumably, Asahel, who's a great runner, he was closer to Abner than they were. I cannot help but wonder that if those three brothers had worked together, Abner's cunning and Abner's superior strength would not have triumphed. Asahel raced ahead, but he should have run with his brothers. And I know here I'm preaching to the converted. But God seldom uses lone rangers. He calls us to be a part of a community, a family, an earthly expression of the kingdom of God. We call it the church. And one of the reasons I come to church is that it's a place where believers work together. Instead of going off each his own way, each your own way, doing this, doing that, accountable to no one. Either way, the two brothers are also pursuing him, the two surviving brothers. And the sun was going down, and they came to the hill of Armah, which is before Gia, by the road of the wilderness of Gibeon. Again, that doesn't mean much to me, but it would have meant something to the original readership. Now the children of Benjamin gathered together behind Abner and became a unit and took their stand on top of a hill. They're being pursued. They come to the top of a hill and they're probably too tired to keep on running. And so they form up. It might have been a square. It might have been a rectangle. They get their shields out. They get their swords and spears ready. And they say, "We're ready for you. We've lost one battle. We're going to have another one now on top of this hill." Of course, they also have an advantageous position. If you're being attacked while you're on top of the hill, the enemy has to run up and he's below you and he has the disadvantage. Abner calls out to Joab. "Shall the sword devour forever?" That's funny. The last time Abner called out to Joab, he was inviting 24 men to fight. Now it hasn't gone his way. He does not want to fight. He wants peace and safety. Do you not know that it will be bitter in the latter end? If I were there, I'd have called out to Abner and said, "Did you not know it would have been bitter forming your own kingdom? When you know that God has appointed David." They didn't trouble you then. Abner continues, "How long will it be then until you tell the people to return from pursuing their brethren?" Oh, their brethren! Their brethren now! When they set up this false kingdom, he wasn't so concerned about brotherhood and peace and mutual respect and tolerance and love. But now Abner wants them all. Abner is a wily character. Notice that although he's defeated in this section, he succeeds in every other respect. He called for those young men to fight, and they fought. He bumps off David's nephew, having first threatened to do so. And now he calls for peace and respect and tolerance and understanding. And he gets that too. Perhaps, however, he was also being a little bit prophetic. I don't want to steal the next section's thunder. But both Joab and Abner do come to bitterness in the next section because of the events that happen here. However, there's a general principle to be observed here. When the enemy calls a truce, it's seldom to our advantage. When the enemy wants to compromise and accommodate, it's seldom for our sake. Job replies in verse 27, "As God lives, unless you had spoken, surely then by morning all the people would have given up pursuing their brethren." It's not altogether clear what he means in verse 27. Does he mean that if Abner hadn't said anything, they would have given up anyway? Does it mean that you shouldn't have said anything? Well, either way, he agrees with Abner in his actions. Maybe the formation scared him. People are not so scary when they're running away. But when they turn round holding a sword, then perhaps it's another matter. Maybe Joab too is feeling tired. They're pursuing people, they're heavily armed, and they're running. It wears you down. Perhaps he's also grieving for his dead brother. But in verse 28, he blows a trumpet. "And all the people stood still and did not pursue Israel anymore, nor did they fight anymore. Then Abner and his men went on all that night through the plain, crossed over the Jordan, and went through all Bithron, and they came to Mahanaim." They've gone full circle. They've gone back to the place they set off from at the beginning of the passage. So although David has a victory, essentially, it's a failure. Abner has been wounded. At least his pride has been. Whether the man himself has been, I doubt. And he's still operating. Verse 30 reads, "So Joab returned from pursuing Abner." That's a sad verse. "So Joab returned from pursuing Abner. And when he had gathered all the people together, there were missing of David's servants 19 men and Asahel. But the servants of David had struck down of Benjamin and Abner's men 360, who died. Then they took up Asahel and buried him in his father's tomb, which was in Bethlehem. And Joab and his men went all night, and they came to Hebron at daybreak." So as far as Abner's concerned, he's lost a lot of men. But that rival Antichrist kingdom of which they are a part continues. Joab, on the other hand, might have defeated Abner's army and signed that rival kingdom's death warrant. But he allowed them to get away. And it seems to me as though the text provides us with two extremes. Asahel, who might have been wise to hold back, went off by himself and came to his death. And Joab, who, had he faced the enemy in the battle, would, I believe, have succeeded. Well, where's my evidence for that? Well, for a start, he's lost only 19. Abner's lost over 300. Joab won the main battle. Presumably he can win the little battle as well. The same God who gave him earlier victory can give him victory again, and yet he pulled back. One rashly went on, pursuing a dangerous individual when he had not the backup to claim victory. Another could have won, but shied away from it when he had all the support he needed. It's a strange passage. What can we get from it? Well, it's a reminder that we Christians are in a battle. It's a reminder that we are warriors. We don't hold real weapons. We don't hurt anyone physically. Never will do. For we don't wrestle with flesh and blood, but principalities and powers. Other religions might do that, but the people of God do not. There is a call here, I think, for Christian unity. And this is not some kind of airy, fairy kind of idea, but a call for people who believe the Bible to work together. There's something winsome about Asahel, who does not turn to the left or to the right. He keeps on going. And yet he fell. And it seems something of a waste. If only he had worked with his brothers. There's also, though, a warning.
You know, 120, 130 years ago, the Church of God in this country
was a powerful force. The gospel was preached in every village. It was preached in every town. That doesn't mean everybody believed it. And I know back then a lot of people came to church and they were tares among the wheat. I know that. And then some new ideas came over from Germany. Seeds were planted. And in the Bible colleges and the seminaries, the professors and the lecturers started teaching that, well, the Bible cannot really be trusted. It can't be taken at face value. Some spoke out against it. Most absorbed it. Most came to an understanding with it. Most called these false teachers brethren, to quote Abner. And as the years went on, the false teaching of unbelief took hold. And the leaders of the Congregational Church, they were taken in by it. And the leaders of the Methodist Church were taken in by it. And the leaders of the Baptist Church were taken in by it. And the bishops in the Church of England were taken in by it. And had they made a stand, like Joab could have finished off Abner there and then, we'd have had a far greater evangelical witness in this country now than we currently have. If Joab had finished the job, a great deal of future grief could have been avoided. Abner was allowed to get away and regroup and reform. And Ish-bosheth continues to be a rival king. And Joab goes back to Hebron. Food for thought. Amen.